From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Halloween weekend 2021. The world champion Milwaukee Bucks have a couple of home games this weekend, trick-or-treat weekend, in fact. Saturday with the Spurs and Sunday with the Jazz. And the Packers, well, they're off this weekend. Let's talk about throwing people under the bus. A cowboy in Wyoming got busted for driving under the influence, but he claimed his four-year-old son, who was sitting in his lap, was actually driving. Not to worry, though, the four-year-old did pass his breathalyzer. The Rhode Island Department of Transportation recently acknowledged that in 1960, the state accidentally paved a highway over a cemetery. And you'd think that driving over 1,000 headstones would have been your first clue. A 7-year-old East Indian boy complained about pain in his jaw for over 4 years. Well, finally, his parents took him to the dentist, and they quickly found a source of pain. It was a mouthful of teeth in various stages of development. If you're counting along at home, a mouthful is 526 teeth. Oh, goodness. The boy was going to be our guest on the podcast today, but he's too busy flossing. A directionally challenged Northern Michigan man faces charges of breaking and entering. How he got caught is the story here. While making his escape, he got lost in the woods and had to call 911 for help. And finally, speaking of 911, our goofy headline of the week comes from the Toronto Star. Man calls 911 because he's stuck in traffic and has to go pee. So did the operator send help? Depends. I knew I was going to get a groan. On the podcast today, we have Kyle Tedding, Art Rothschild, Paige Ratke, Joel Dreising, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Nothing spooky about the results this week in the stock market. NASDAQ up 2.7%, climbing 408 points to close at 15,498. Meanwhile, in the broader markets, the S&P stock composite 500 climbed 1.3%, up now 6.9% for the month of October. What a great month. We closed today at 4605, new record for the S&P. Dow Jones Industrial Average tacked on 143 points, climbing 0.4% this week. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week 35,820. Kyle, what's not to like? You know, we did lose 5% in September, made it all back plus some in October. Earnings season, we're halfway through. 82% of the companies beat expectations. Pretty good backdrop for the stock market.
Yeah, not too much to be disappointed about right now. Up 24% for the year on the S&P 500. You talk about what was an absolutely incredible October. I think, you know, plenty of reason to think that we're seeing support as we look into the future for the very things that the market is providing right now, right? That we tend to see the market anticipating a lot of the potential gains that are coming in earnings next year. I mentioned last week on the podcast that we had some of the payment processors that would be reporting this week. We heard from both Visa and MasterCard, who mentioned that one of the big things they see is a potential significant uptick in things like cross-border travel. Well, if you're going from the U.S. to another country, you're going to probably be using a credit card for that. And so no wonder that they can see that on their horizon as a potential pretty significant positive. I think, you know, those kinds of, you know, potential increases in travel supported by the fact that the FTA today came out and put their stamp on the potential for 5 to 11-year-olds getting that COVID shot. And so I think as the CDC takes the final step of approval, as parents are now more comfortable traveling again with their families, I think all of a sudden you're entering a world in which the one thing that was still holding us back, which was those of us with young children, I think still a little bit concerned about what would happen to our children if we did get on a plane, if we did go stay in a hotel somewhere. I think you start to see more people comfortable moving about the country, even moving about you know, the world again, once we get some of that under our belts.
Joel, clearly one of the top headlines for the week. Commerce Department reported on Thursday economic growth fell to 2% at an annualized rate in the third quarter, way down from the plus 6% that we saw earlier in the year. blaming the surge in COVID, supply chain problems, and the fading impact of government stimulus.
Bob, I think we're seeing all sorts of indicators that the growth is slowing, and that's just one of them. It's pretty dramatic, that GDP stuff. And you think about the second quarter when we had that 6.7% growth, that was fueled by the stimulus from the government, the reopening of a lot of businesses, the promise of vaccinations and what that was doing. Yeah, and then, you know, we hit the third quarter and we've got the Delta variant of the virus coming out. We've got all these supply chain management problems that are creeping up and you know, kind of hurting the supply of the demand that's still kind of out there. And we're also seeing switches. And I think we talked about this on podcasts before, and this comes through in the GDP numbers, is that, you know, we're seeing more of a demand for services and less for durable goods. So just as businesses are trying to recalibrate, after reopening from the pandemic, consumers are switching what they're wanting to buy.
Economists are still expecting strong consumer demand and hopefully the easing of the pandemic to boost growth moving forward. Other good news, your end of it all, consumer confidence up, reversing 3 months of declines.
Yeah, that's really good. And, you know, we always say about the consumers driving the economy, 70% of GDP is, you know, comes from consumer spending. And we had those numbers from the Commerce Department. I think from the Conference Board, that was the first time in 4 months that that their index went up. And again, they're talking about easing concerns for the Delta variant now that we're seeing some of those COVID numbers go down. I mean, we're hearing some predictions that now that people in places like us are going to be confined in indoor spaces more, that, you know, we're still not out of the woods. But just the sign of you know, more people getting vaccinations. And as Kyle pointed out, the kids are involved now, too, that that's all kind of feeding that the hope that things are going to be better.
Paige, let's bring you into the show. October is a whole lot better looking than September.
That is correct. So September obviously was a really tough month. I think that all through September, there was a lot of focus on all of the negatives and all of the possible, you know, negative drivers to the stock market. Fear was really running things. It wasn't so much driven by the actual numbers that were coming out so much as it was, you know, issues in Washington, concerns about rising inflation, concerns about corporate earnings not necessarily meeting expectations. Then, like you said earlier, we flip over to October, companies start reporting. As it turns out, they were a lot more resilient than originally expected. So despite the fact that you're seeing a lot of references to supply chain issues, a lot of references to some of the wage situations that we have going on, corporations are resilient and they're able to find ways to make money despite those challenges. One thing that I found interesting just within those numbers was the one of the ways that they've been navigating that is focusing production on some of the higher profit margin pieces. So if you think, you know, people need dishwashers, so why not focus on creating or manufacturing the dishwashers that have the highest profit margins, which of course helps their earnings, but then also, you know, has a play in some of those inflation numbers that we're seeing.
Earnings across the board, I mean, I think they look really good. Good results from the banks, consumer companies, even the manufacturers. Art, time for you to jump in here. What do you think about things?
I think things are pretty good. As you guys have indicated already, I mean, September was all talk about declines, possible correction. You can't predict it. It just happens, and it didn't happen. We haven't had a correction. We haven't had a 10% sell-off since the market dropped 35% incident to the pandemic. So in my reviews, first of all, I'm giving people good news. You know, year to date, everybody's making money. The only question is how much. And then I'm going back further. If you look at this year and you tack on last year, I mean, we're up over 23% on the S&P this year, 18% last year, 31% the year before. You string those together with 10-year results that are off the charts, and we've got a lot of very happy clients. So spending a lot of time talking about what's good and then looking forward. The slowdowns we've had this year, concerns about inflation. Kyle wrote a great article that shows up in our newsletter being released today about inflation. You know, it's just shocking to hear all the concerns about, oh, you know, prices are jumping. Yeah, sure, because prices were so low. So they had room to go up. We've got shortages of materials. We've got shortages of parts that go into cars, semiconductors and the like. I think there's good news here. I think the future is brighter because there's pent-up demand, which will continue to be manifest in higher expenditures, which I think is going to result in higher profits going forward. So I'm glad I'm a long-term investor. I'm glad that's what we do for a living, because it's kind of fun to be talking to people right now.
Kyle, China just stays in the news. Evergrande, the big property developer, met yet another debt payment. So that's taking some of the pressure off. But junk bond issuance has fallen 90% in China. That's a huge number. So as the debt rolls forward and they look for new supply, that might be harder to get.
Yeah, you know, I always think it's interesting that we tend to eschew those things that already have, you know, gotten their nose dirty, that by the time we knew about Evergrande and by the time we decided maybe we shouldn't buying all this Chinese junk debt, the bud may have already been off the rose at that point in time, right? It may have already been too late. And so I think, you know, as we look at kind of the global debt market in particular, there's still some challenges just with the strength of the dollar, let alone some of the challenges that persist in the Chinese market more broadly or some other parts of the world. But I think it's probably healthy at this point in time that they're having the troubles they're having, healthy that it hasn't occurred in the span of a week or two, but it's really been stretched out over months now. It gives the market time to try to reprice what they're willing to accept as far as taking on those risks. And so I think you get a little bit of an overreaction in terms of how quickly issuance disappeared from that part of the market. I think we'll find a happy medium again maybe a few months from now when we start to see some more issuance. But it probably happens at a little bit higher interest rate than what was paying before, a little bit higher spread, because ultimately investors, in order to bear that risk, want to get paid for it. And so I think, you know, it's part of that pricing process, right? It's part of finding the happy middle here. And if we swing too far a little one direction, we're going to swing back the other. It's the same conversation we had with inflation. It's the same conversation we had with some of the impact of fears about COVID. Is we always swing too far a little bit to one side. You want to catch the momentum. You want to catch that pendulum swinging back the other way. That's the thing that I think really provides some potential return. When it comes to, you know, buying Chinese stocks or buying Chinese debt right now, maybe not the time to be doing it, but there will be a time when maybe it starts to look a little more attractive when everybody else feels pretty bearish about it, when you're getting paid to do it. That's when it starts to look a little more attractive.
Chinese government, of course, walking a very fine line. They know they've got a property bubble. They know that property development has led their economic growth for decades now. The average Chinese has so much of their net worth tied up in property, and it's a problem. You know, I mentioned on the show a couple of weeks ago that 90% of urban Chinese own their own homes. It's a huge number compared to 60-some-odd percent here in the United States. So if you've got so much tied to property development and to the wealth of those primarily condos, you know, that's a problem. How do you support that? And at the same time, how do you try to discourage people from sinking so much money into them? I don't know that they easily solve that problem. We figured out in the financial crisis that you really can't solve bubbles. When they burst, they're just going to burst. You know, it's interesting how it's playing out in countries like Australia. They spend a lot of their energy digging raw materials out of the ground, put them on barges, send them to China. And as the Chinese economy continues to slow down, it's impacting now the commodity providers. And it's, you know, all over the place, not just in Asia, but in parts of Latin America that export to China as well. So I think that's something to keep. And I was impressed that the dollar actually weakened the last couple of days. And I've been waiting for that for the longest time. You know, I like some of the valuations overseas, but I've learned the hard way over the years, you got to wait till the dollar starts weakening a little bit to make meaningful commitments over there.
And just, you know, one other thought on this China issue, and that is that, you know, we've got it pretty good here in the U.S. as investors, and that we can look at the world and go, where do we want to invest? I think we need to remember that the Chinese are fairly new. The Chinese population is fairly new to middle class wealth, to the ability to have money beyond just basic subsistence for a good part of the country. And so with the inability for them to go anywhere they want, with rules in place on what they can invest in, where they can go, housing was one of the areas that they could put money in. And so it's no wonder that you've got housing as a significant portion of Chinese wealth. I think the challenge, of course, is that unless some of those government constraints change, and I doubt that's happening anytime soon, it's going to remain one of the few places that many middle-class Chinese can park large sums of money. And so I think you've created an environment, much that we created some environments here in the past that rewarded maybe some bad decision-making with respect to investment spend. And it's one of the reasons I think why investors here should be grateful that, they've got the opportunity to shop the world. They've got the opportunity to go, okay, this doesn't look like a great idea right now, but maybe it will be a great idea at some point in time in the future. And so let's, hang out on the sidelines and jump in when the time comes.
Kyle, I was somewhat disappointed to see that Congress didn't put together their spending bill by the end of the week as they had intended. Disappointed from the tax picture standpoint that we're still in the gray area of knowing what changes are going to be made to the tax code. But, I got to tell you that Congress has walked back from some of the worst ideas. And, without much of a change at all in capital gains tax, sure, a surcharge if you make more than $10 million, okay, that's all right. But they, had earlier in the year talked about doing away with the step-up in basis at death. That would affect almost everyone. And they were also talking about changing the estate tax, now with the exclusions so high. So, tax issues that would absolutely affect people that we work for, a lot of those are falling by the wayside. And then I read earlier this morning that they may increase the state and local tax threshold at $10,000, that they're going to remove it entirely for next year and 2023. That'll save people here in Wisconsin that pay a fair amount of property tax and state income tax. If it's above 10 grand, you're probably going to save a couple of dollars. So, Kyle, when I look at it net, for the most part, I think we dodged the bullet on this one, hopefully.
Yeah, I think it's less and less likely at this point that any of the potential tax implications that would have affected a number of our clients, as opposed to just a very small number of our clients, are looking increasingly unlikely. I think that the problem, of course, is that we just don't know until we see the final wording of the bill, until we've had some analysis of those bills. And so there's plenty of time for bad ideas to be thrown back out there. I think there's a history of some pretty bad ideas being thrown out when it comes to some of these debates. Of course, I think you hope that they get thrown out in the wash, right? That they get cleaned out, and you have some better provisions in there. The challenge, of course, is that if we are talking about a $1.5 trillion spending bill, the way we're talking right now, you got to pay for it somehow. You got to find a way to get some increased tax revenue to cut in other places, and so there are going to be some changes to the tax code. And it's just a function of keeping an eye on what those are. I think the other thing to remember, and this is true of the last time we went through meaningful tax change on the corporate side under Trump, and that is that we didn't really have a full way to forecast what those changes would entail until they were already in place. And so when you looked at corporate earnings forecasts, all of a sudden we got a huge jump in a lot of those forecasts because of the benefits of that changing tax structure. When you look at some of the things that we're talking about now, probably not a huge impact to most corporations, but we could see some minor shifts in earnings forecasts. We could see some minor shifts in kind of corporate forecasts as far as the
profit. Probably a shift in stock buybacks with 1% surcharge.
It does sound like that's certainly going to be the case. And I think, in many ways, maybe it encourages some more capital expenditure. Maybe that solves some of the supply problem that we seem to be having in a lot of areas. I know certainly the semiconductor business is potentially looking at a pretty good influx of cash with some tax incentives here in the U.S. And so I think there's a lot of ways we can address the very issues we talk about on this podcast. The tax system is certainly one of them. And I think it's just a function of trying to align what should be happening with what is happening.
We're going to be into November pretty quick here. Want to remind listeners that for those that are eligible, think about donating money from your IRA to charity. You got to be at least 70 and a half years old for this trick. But we can't ask the trustees to do it late in the year. So think about that for the month of November. If you're required to do minimum withdrawals from your retirement accounts, you want to circle back with your advisors to make sure that that's all on target. You know, I like November and December for the stock market, the seasonality of the market. We don't talk about that a lot. Of course, my other favorite months are the other 10. but I particularly like November and December. We normally get Santa Claus rallies. That helps the cause. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.